Welcome to Series 5 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Red Setter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Red Setter. In this series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today.
This week, I'm here with Alex Moulton, Chief Creative Officer of New York-based branding and design studio, Trollback. He's also a cinematographer, music video director, and has DJed worldwide. He works for clients such as Apple, Audible, Disney Plus, Google, HBO Max, IMAX, MTV, Marriott Hotels, Sesame Street, which is one of my favorites, many more. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Claire. I am a big fan of this podcast, and I am just so happy to finally be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoy recording it. Should we start at the beginning then? Your journey is really interesting. I love all the places you've worked. When did you realize design was a thing that you could base your career around?
I didn't realize that design, in the official sense of what I call a capital D design, was really a career that I wanted to pursue until my early 20s. And I think that was partially because I was focused in a number of other creative areas. It started really early for me. My dad was an architect, mm-hmm. and he switched to interiors later in his career. So I grew up with a drafting table in my house and would visit the companies where he worked and got to experience that side of creativity. And he's an excellent illustrator. And so art and drawing was always something that attracted me. My mom was a piano teacher, so okay. creativity was very much in the house. At the same time, my focus really early in life was becoming a filmmaker. That was everything that I wanted to do. It started so early. I think that I was a child of the 70s and of a kid who grew up loving Star Wars and loving special effects and loving yeah. George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and a lot of the kind of big fantasy directors of the time. And I had an opportunity pretty young to move to London with my family for just about 2 years and enrolled in a performing arts school. And it wasn't something that I had planned, nor was I focused on acting or singing at that time, but that's what happened. And I discovered that I really enjoyed those different ways to express myself. I learned through that I wasn't the best actor or the best singer, but as a young boy, it was so much fun. And I got to be very close to a lot of different pieces of filmmaking. Like, for example, like the school that I went to, they were a place where if a theater company needed to hire young actors or a film company needed to hire young actors, they would approach the school. So I had professional opportunities at age 11 and age 12, where I was doing voiceovers and I was recording wow. and singing. And it was just a really special time.
That's
and
so
through
cool.
that, yeah. And through that, I got to have professional experiences. I got to, you know, show up and take work seriously and be paid for the work. But I also got to experience things like working in a voiceover booth and seeing for the first time how Foley sounds were made and understanding the technical process that was happening behind the scenes, which was so much fun. And I took all of those experiences and my love for music at the time and my love for film back to California when my family moved back to where I grew up. I transferred all of that experience into really focusing on teaching myself how to pick up a video camera and make fun little films at nights and on the weekends with my friends. And oh. I would compose the music for those films and make spec commercials and, you know, just play and learn the skills. Yeah. And at that point, really focused on enrolling in film school, and that was everything that I wanted to do. And I decided that I wanted to study cinematography and study lighting, a lot of those technical pieces that I found fascinating.
Yeah.
And part of that was a love for special effects and kind of a lot of the things that had inspired me as a really young kid about filmmaking. And that's what I set out to do. And I went to film school and came out of film school and moved to New York, where I had had a lot of friends that I met in school who were from here and were living here, and just immersed myself in the world of independent film. So this is, to set the context, this is the end of the 90s, and there was quite a large independent film community happening in New York at the time.
Okay. What sort of stuff then? What did you do?
Oh, a lot of terrible things. I mean, just terrible projects. And you know, if I look back on it, I do look back on it fondly.
Yeah.
It was so much fun, and we were learning, but we were also working really long hours for very low pay. And a lot of the projects that I worked on went nowhere, right? Like they would end up on a director's shelf somewhere, or maybe make it to a festival. But I didn't feel like I was getting the traction that I wanted. And I started to look outside of what I was doing. And as I was meeting other people, I started to see that there was so much more that was happening in New York. And at the time, I was DJing. You mentioned that I'm a DJ, and I still DJ. And I mean, I just have this love for music and fell into DJing and collecting records when I was in college.
So you do like vinyl DJing, do you do CDJs and everything, or is it?
At the time, I was just using vinyl. I don't think CDJs had been invented yet, but I mean, now it's strictly a laptop situation.
Yeah.
Which is much easier on your back instead of having to carry crates of records around all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
But I was DJing, and I was meeting a lot of people in the music industry here, and I was playing in a band, and the leader of that band, his brother owned one of the first motion graphics design companies in New York, a company called Eyeball, which doesn't exist anymore, but at the time was one of really a few companies in the United States that was pioneering this new idea of design and communication and storytelling through motion graphics. It was just a whole new arena that didn't exist a few years previous. And my first interactions with Eyeball were not as a freelancer or a staff member, but I was working on film projects and asking them if they would, you know, in the most naive way possible, quote unquote, do the graphics for what I was working on, right? I didn't have even an understanding of the process yet. But together we would collaborate, and I just fell in love with what they were making and the freedom and the excitement and this spirit of innovation.
Yeah.
That anything was possible now, and you could do it with a desktop computer. It sounds quaint to say it now, but it didn't exist, you know, 5 years before that. That became the thing that really inspired me, and that ended up becoming my first job, was working at Eyeball.
So they took you on and recognized the transferable skills you had.
Yeah, I should say my first full-time job. Before that, I was working and I was a freelancer. But I really shifted out of filmmaking into a whole new arena and learned design from the beginning. It was almost like going to school all over again. And there was just this sense of freedom and play and experimentation that I fell in love with.
Definitely. So how long were you there for? What happened next?
I worked at Eyeball from 2000 until roughly 2003 or 4. However, during that time, I saw the way that the industry functioned in terms of bringing together the visual aspects of what we were producing at Eyeball and the sonic and audio aspects of how music was created for film and for TV.
Yeah, okay.
And I saw a really big opportunity to create a new business model that I felt would be more authentic for creating music for commercials and for television and for branding.
Okay.
And so in 2002, I started another business while also still working at Eyeball. As that trailed off, I ramped up a new business and created a company called Expansion Team. And Expansion Team was a pretty novel way to create music for all of this new media that we were creating. And we were hiring composers and DJs and sound designers who were coming from a whole arena that wasn't the quote-unquote ad world, right? So these were people who were on tour and they were traveling the world and they really had an understanding of how audiences were reacting to music and what was hot at the time and what was cool and you know, what was current. And then I was tapping into that and working with them as a creative director and a musician myself to create music for all of the work we were doing at Eyeball, and then ultimately for a huge range of companies.
Wow.
And advertising agencies. Mm-hmm. And I ran Expansion Team for 10 years, and it really shifted focus initially from creating just music into a very strategic sonic branding agency, which was, a novel arena.
That's how it's going to say. Sonic branding in my head is relatively recent. I would have been in the last 10 years or so, but you're saying Expansion Team was getting stuck into that sonic branding much earlier on. Interesting.
We were among the first few companies that started to talk seriously with clients about sonic branding and the power of sound. And it was, again, this idea of something totally novel and a lot of innovation happening. The link for me between the work we were doing with sound and music and what I had been learning how to do with design and with motion graphics design and storytelling was that it was still a design process. Mm-hmm. So I started to really have a deeper understanding of what brand strategy could be and what created a great brand strategy. But applying that through sound was a way that I could actually make an impact with these brands.
Yes.
I felt like we could do that authentically and we could do it more creatively than some of the other options that were out there at the time.
Yeah, definitely. That must be good. So I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I can see what you do now at Trollback. It's just like the perfect amalgamation of all these skills, basically, isn't it? With the motion and the music and the brand and the film, TV, all that kind of stuff.
It is. For me, it makes perfect sense. It seems like when I look back at my career or when I describe the story to others that it was a series of pivots. But for me, it has always been about trying to take on bigger challenges and trying to innovate the businesses that can actually deliver something very new to clients. So there's the business aspect, which is something I really, really enjoy. And there's the artistic aspect of it. There's the art, there's the really challenging and asking big questions component of it. Yeah. You know, if I think of what design represents for me, design is a practice. And design is a practice of really answering a lot of the questions that art can ask. So if art is the practice of asking questions, design is the practice of answering those questions. And then business is really that practice of delivering the answers to those questions, delivering the solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. And solving those problems.
And solving those problems. And I love that practice of design. And it's something I fell in love with that first job I was describing, and have learned what the power of that process can be, you know, for brands that as I've gotten to work with ever larger brands at a kind of increasing scale, and the brands we work with are global in nature. And so I just trust that process and it always delivers the results that our clients need, but it's a really enjoyable creative process for me and for the teams that I get to work with.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. What ended that company? Did you leave the company? Is it still going?
So Expansion Team ran for 10 years from roughly 2002 to 2012. And then we decided to fold it back into Eyeball. The company started as a singular unit and then separated and ran as two separate companies. And then we would work with everyone from large ad agencies, a lot of brands, directly with competitors.
Yeah.
And then we decided that the way that Eyeball was growing, since I had left it, it would make a lot of sense for me to come back and work at Eyeball. And I took on an executive creative director role, and we folded in all of the capabilities from Expansion Team under the Eyeball umbrella.
That sounds like the sort of thing that I think people would just carry on within their careers. What were you missing then to move on? So you've obviously moved on to some other really interesting stuff.
Are you asking, like, why did I move on from Expansion Team?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Why did you move on from Expansion Team? What happened?
I think that how do I answer that question? The reason that I started Expansion Team was to really focus on one area where I felt like I could make an impact.
Yeah.
And over the 10 years that that company was running, I started to see that by focusing just on sound and just on music, I had really limited the purview of what I could contribute creatively.
Okay.
So to say that another way, I became the sound guy, the person in the room who could speak with authority on one very specific aspect of an entire scope. And I didn't really enjoy that after 10 years of doing that. I felt like I had a lot to contribute with the visual nature of a brand and the graphic design of a brand and the brand strategy in its widest scope. And so I really wanted to open the aperture and come back to a place where I could continue to work in sound and work in music and apply a lot of the learnings that I had made there, but also get back into the visual side of what I really love and what I had studied and what I had originally set out to do. That's how I was able to start to balance those things simultaneously under one umbrella.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you went freelance and started to take on lots of different projects.
So when we folded Expansion Team into Eyeball, I took a full-time role back at Eyeball. And I was there for 3 years until I then left, was freelance for just a few months, and then went to work at Vice Media.
Yeah, tell me about Vice. That was an interesting place to work.
Working at Vice was my first experience not working in a small studio environment.
Yeah.
So previous to that, I had been working with tight groups of creative people in companies that were anywhere from 10 to 30 people. When I left Eyeball, it was about 70. So it had grown considerably. But when I went to work at Vice, there were several thousand people working at the company. So this was a totally new experience. But I was originally hired freelance as a consultant to help them conceive of what became Vice Land, the Vice TV channel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then was hired full-time to work on Live Nation TV, which was a joint venture between Live Nation, which is the world's largest concert promoter.
Yeah.
And who owns many festivals and work with the biggest stars in the world on their tours. With the team at Vice to create a completely new content operation. So we were covering the world of live music with video and daily editorial and news. And I had a creative director role there on that team. So got that team up and running and was working with a team in New York and another team in Los Angeles. And it was just a whole new world. But I got to apply a lot of my music knowledge and a lot of my branding knowledge and start to build a whole new content platform.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, it was just diving into something completely new And we were creating something that was very innovative for the world of digital media publishing at the time.
Did you work directly with the artists themselves, or I'm trying to think, like, who were your favorite artists that you work with, and like, what did you do with them?
Unfortunately, in my role, I didn't get to interface with a lot of artists. I think going in, I thought, oh, I'm going to get to rub shoulders with all of these stars while they're on tour. We had a lot of crews out shooting around the world all the time.
I mean, you get the video content and then you do stuff with that. Yeah, okay, that makes more sense.
Right, but in my role, I was largely overseeing a lot of the creative and a lot of the production. And then I was also working on the marketing and branding of our content platform and working with our advertising partners. So a bit of a hybrid role where, unfortunately, I didn't get to work with directly with a lot of the musicians that we were creating content for.
So what did you do after that? What was your next move?
My next move was to come to Trollback. And so I've been at Trollback for 7 years. And coming to a studio like Trollback was really a dream for me.
Tell me how you found Trollback. I'm a huge fan of the work.
Thank you. Trollback and I go way, way back in time. So if I go back into the days of when I first started to work at Eyeball, and I was describing before that there were very few motion design companies.
Yeah.
At the time in New York, Eyeball was one of them and Trollback was another. And they were both very small groups of people. I think at Eyeball, we had 6 staff at the time. Maybe it grew to 10 in those first couple of years.
Yeah.
Trollback was a similar size. Trollback was 6, 7, maybe 10 people. And our two teams were all friends. So there was very little competitive spirit. We would all hang out together. We would throw parties together.
Brilliant.
And so some of my first experiences with Trollback were not on the professional side. They were just social. We actually threw parties, and I would DJ, and Jacob Trollback, which is where the name Trollback comes from. Jacob is our founder here. He would DJ after me.
Yeah.
And we got to know one another over that time, and we stayed in touch. And Jacob and I talk about music. That's our common ground. He's a DJ, and he fell in love with design from having to originally design flyers for his DJ gigs in Stockholm when he was young. And so we had this common ground that we would connect on over time and check in with one another. And when I found myself at the end of my role advice, which was just a function of them deciding that the brand that we had built at Vice had an end date. And so the whole operation was shuttered. I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. I really didn't know. And I decided I should go out to see some people and be social again. And I went to a art director's club event called Young Guns, which you may be familiar with.
It's a
great opportunity for young designers to get noticed and to have their work seen by their peers, but also by the luminaries of these industries in the design world. And I ran into Jacob at that event. I said hi to him at the beginning of the event, and then I checked in with him at the event at the end, and I said goodbye. And he said, "What are you doing now?" And I said, "Well, I don't have a job next week." He looked at me and said, "Come work for me." And I didn't take it seriously. I just laughed it off. But the next week, I went in and met with the two people who are now my colleagues, Danielle, who is our CEO, and Erica, who's our executive producer. And we just talked about what the future of the company would be and the inflection point that the business was in. And Jacob was very eager to start a new consultancy based in Stockholm, where he could focus on social impact work and take the work that he had just finished here at Trollback in New York, building the design system for the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And he could start to apply that to to the private sector and to the public sector. And that left an opening, a troll back that they asked me if I would fill. So rather daunting.
That is rather daunting.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, this is the company I love and adore and have always looked up to.
Yeah.
And so it was just the next big challenge. And so, of course, I said yes. How could I not?
Absolutely. Tell me about Trollback then, what it started doing and how that's changed. The clients you work with are fantastic. I love the work you do.
Thank you. I love our clients. We have always focused on a few industries, namely media, entertainment, journalism. That arena has just seen tremendous growth. So in the early days of the work that we do at Trollback, before I joined the company, this meant creating branding for TV networks. So, you know, before we all had phones in our pockets, the need for motion graphics and motion design was really focused on the big screen. So creating film titles was something that Trollback was very well known for.
Right, okay.
And creating for the medium-sized screen, which is a TV. And that work is work that I adore. It's work that I had done at Eyeball. It's work that continued for me working at Vice. And I love working with media and entertainment. And also, I saw a huge opportunity with taking what Trollback had always been known for, which is very smart, thoughtful design that was delivered with clarity and simplicity, but also strategic rigor, and applying that to a much broader set of business sectors. So we could take that, build upon the work that had already been doing. There was so much work that was happening here for Spotify, for a number of other businesses that were starting to understand that design could play a very important role in their companies, Apple, namely.
Yeah.
And we could start to apply that to any number of business sectors. And that coincides also with the rise of social media and all of us being dependent on the smallest screen, which we carry around with ourselves. And so in many ways, this idea that motion graphics design, which was a very focused discipline in its early days, could be broadly applicable and much more strategic and culture shaping force across every single business, I think is a really powerful idea. And so what we've built here in the time that I've been part of the company is a much wider aperture of where we can apply the expertise that we have in creating content, in helping create design systems, in creating motion identities for brands in ways that I could never have imagined, you know, 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago when I started in this business.
So you took all that work with like the brand identities for channels with a bit of motion involved in that and have applied it to companies like Apple and Disney Plus and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and Disney Plus was a dream come true to work on.
Tell me about that. What you can tell me about that, because I know there's limitations with Disney, but what's really interesting stuff. How did that come about?
It has just been an honor to be a contributor to, you know, I and my team are a small part of thousands of people that have contributed to the success of Disney Plus, but we were there at the very beginning, about a year out before launch, and continued to work with Disney Plus for a number of years after launch to really set the stage for all of the design systems that empower all the teams globally to create what we as consumers experience Disney Plus as every day. What we created with Disney Plus is all of the design system, the brand strategy, and the motion design system that wraps all of the content. So every time that you, for example, see an ad for a show on Disney Plus, or now you have all of the bundled services, so you see Disney Plus and ESPN Plus and Hulu together in the United States, in other territories, if you're listening to this in the UK or in Latin America or in Asia, you don't have Hulu, you have Star. So there are, we had to think through all of these very important challenges that they had to create a very consistent brand at scale across all of the territories where Disney Plus was launching.
Yeah,
and then how to optimize that system and how to let it flourish and grow and continually engage people. And that's where I think the work that we do is at its best, because we are thinking long term about how to solve design problems, but also how to create what I consider to be more sustainable solutions for helping creative teams run their businesses.
Yeah.
When there are so many moving parts and they're constantly changing and shifting.
Are there any other companies you work with where it's a similar sort of approach? I love that very complex situation that you've just made it all quite seamlessly work.
You mentioned Marriott Bonvoy or Marriott Hotels. So we worked with, for a number of years, as Marriott, which is, you know, a huge global hotel chain with many, many sub-brands. We helped them create a similar type of system and approach for Marriott Bonvoy, which at its heart is a rewards program. So if you stay at a Marriott hotel, you can earn points and you can apply those points. That's an interesting business proposition, but the way that we were able to create a very consistent motion design system that is applicable to their social media channels, to the content that they create, to the in-room TV channel that they have that plays in every single hotel room across the planet, is a way that I see us being able to apply some of those learnings from big media companies working with a Disney Plus or working with Apple or Apple TV Plus, how we can apply those to other businesses that you might not traditionally think of as media companies. So many of those companies now have this need to be consistent and creative across all of these different touch points that didn't exist 10 years ago, really.
So how has that affected your role today? How would you describe your role today within Trollback?
So my day-to-day is wildly different every single day.
Yeah.
And I so enjoy that. The best parts of my day are when I get to deeply immerse myself in a client's brand. And that's what drives me. We work with so many different clients and so many different business sectors that it requires that I'm constantly learning and understanding what's important to them, what drives their business, how we can solve their challenges. But along the way, I'm learning about AI. I'm learning about the global hospitality business, right? Yeah. These are not subjects that I ever went to school to learn. I learn it by doing it. And that's the best part of my day, is immersing myself in their brands and trying to step into each of those opportunities with a sense of empathy. So putting myself in the shoes of our clients and really understanding, you know, what they need and why they need it, and what's going to help them push the brand forward and push their creative teams forward to be able to create better and be more creative and tell better stories. So that's the fun part. I also get to work on very specific projects where sometimes I'm a creative director. I still get to creative direct projects. I get to work with our team to help them articulate their ideas. I've put in a practice that we are in year two or year three of, where I'm working with each of our team members to write articles about their perspectives on design, on the industry, but also just sharing their voice and honing their voice. I think that's a really important piece of growing as a designer, is learning how to write well and how to communicate in a compelling way. I get to work on our social media and our marketing. I work in new business. So my role is really putting my energy where we need to be engaged. Yeah. And I think that's what I really enjoy, is being able to shift gears quickly and change my focus and always be learning and asking questions and helping shape the culture of this company, but also shape the cultures of the companies that we get to work with every day.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. The number of opportunities to learn about new things in design is what, I mean, one of the many things I love about it. You're just always learning about new stuff.
It's the most important piece of the design practice for me. I think it's what really drives it. And it's what has continued to inspire me about design. And it's, frankly, it's a surprise. I thought that I would spend my life making films. And that's, the switch from filmmaking to design makes sense to me because I think there are a lot of skills that transfer. But the practice of design has proven to be something that I just find very timeless and something that I keep coming back to. And I can always be a student and always be learning.
Yeah.
And there's something that I think is really interesting about both the role that I'm in and the practice of design, which is that it requires you to have empathy, mm-hmm. which I mentioned before, which yeah. means stepping into the shoes of someone else and seeing it from a different perspective. And also being vulnerable, allowing yourself to not have the answers to the questions, because the practice of design is asking those questions and then trusting that there is a process that will lead you to potential solutions, but that you don't need to have all the answers at the beginning of that process, nor should you.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. You shouldn't. That's important.
And I think those are great life lessons too, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's much deeper than just a job or a business mindset.
Yeah, completely agree. I was going to talk about, how do you fuel your creativity? Would that be, do you have separate things you do to fuel the whole thing? Or is it that learning process?
It is very much the learning process. For me, the thing that fuels the creativity is the team. I have learned over time that the people that I work with are just as important, if not more important, than the work that I'm doing. So the team that we have here are some of the most intelligent and most creative people that I've ever had the opportunity to work with. And seeing the way that they think about the world, the way that they process information, seeing what inspires them is really what inspires me.
Yeah.
So, you know, every day I get to work with designers, but with writers and thinkers and business people. And it really doesn't matter what their role is. It's still creative input for me.
Yeah.
And it keeps me endlessly inspired.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very important part of it. Can I ask you about the design industry? Are there any aspects of it you find challenging?
I think there's so much that's challenging about the industry right now. The one thing that I'm finding very challenging right now is an expectation that the work that we do can be done with increasing speed, which is to say that we are given very large challenges by our clients.
Yeah.
And whether they are expressly asking for it or this is criteria we place upon ourselves, the understanding is that we are creating an innovative solution. We are doing something that's never been done before. And I think that creative process takes time. It requires that you learn about your audience. It requires that you do your research. It requires that you have a period of experimentation and play, that you can make mistakes along the way that ultimately will lead you to something new and wonderful and exciting and compelling. And when the expectation is that that process can be compressed into a timeline that is, say, 4 weeks or 6 weeks, that is very challenging to me. And I have seen that expectation get increasingly fast over the course of my career.
You can be, but you're not going to get the results and the impact or any of the stuff people are looking for. You're just going to get some stuff that doesn't really work at the end of it. Yeah, it kind of works, but not brilliance.
Not brilliance. And I think that that's implicit upon us as designers servicing our clients well to describe what that process looks like and what it requires of them and the collaboration that it takes between our teams and our clients' teams, so that maybe they have a reframed understanding of how to get the best result.
Yeah.
And that we don't know the answers going in.
Yeah.
Right. That we have to come to every project with an open mind. And yeah, we don't want to repeat ourselves. There's something that Jacob said to me early on when I started here, which I've always taken to heart, which is that as a design company, we should never repeat ourselves. Every solution should be novel and should be built for that specific client and for the request that comes in. And so it's really important that we don't go into anything with an assumption. And I think that process takes time. And so there is a bit of that discussion that happens, the push and pull with a client very early in the process, mm-hmm, about mapping a workflow and mapping a timeline and creating an understanding and an appreciation for the time that takes in order to get to a result that is going to shape their business and their culture in a way that isn't reactive, but is built with sustainability in mind.
Absolutely. Do most clients get it? Do you end up with, what's the hit rate on that?
I don't have a metric for it. It's always a conversation. And sometimes it's a conversation that's successful. We find that the collaborations that we have with our clients that prove to have the best results are ones where there is a really strong voice on the client side who is a champion for the work that we are doing or that we're setting out to do.
Yeah.
And when we have that counterpoint on the client team, they always get it. They are someone who has advocated to do this work in the first place. They understand the stakes for their business, but also the process that the work takes in order to achieve that result. And that you can have great results, but you can also have great conversations with those people along the way. When we are approached by clients who are perhaps totally new to working with external agencies or studios or vendors in creating something that is designed, we have to do a little bit of education about the process that we need to go on. And that might change a bit of what their expectation is in terms of the timeline that's required for that. But the education that we do can't be pedantic. It has to be part of a collaborative process. And so often what we will do is approach it in a phased way so that we say, there are things that are very important to the ultimate success of this process.
Yeah.
Like research, like experimentation and play. Can we just focus on that until we understand what we really want to ultimately create? Because deliverables will change, the scope may change. So let's focus on what the ingredients will be at the earliest stage and then decide what it is we really want to make that's going to change your business for the better.
Absolutely. Have you got any top tips for a junior starting out today?
I think I have two tips. One is to ask a lot of questions. The second is to make yourself invaluable. So the first is about being inquisitive and curious, which is what drives design and the process. But asking why more often, making yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because people won't judge. I promise people won't judge if you are asking questions about process or why are we presenting this work this way. I really appreciate when young designers or young strategists or young writers are inquisitive about what makes the work good, and you can see them starting to ask those questions and then get deeper and deeper and start to apply a lot of those learnings. And it builds confidence over time.
Yeah.
So that's the first piece of it. And then the second piece is really like allowing yourself to be open and be vulnerable and see how others are doing their work, right?
Yeah.
And not feeling like you have to know all the answers at the beginning. Because the truth is, even as you progress in your career, you may be taking on different challenges or bigger challenges, but the not knowing is actually the most fun part.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So having that spirit and cultivating that excitement about the unknown is, I think, what drives longevity in a career, as opposed to feeling like you have to have the answers and you have to create a sense of confidence where you're the best, right?
Yeah.
I think it's okay to say, I don't know, and I want to learn, and how do I continue to learn, and how do I be a contributor to every piece of this business? And that's how you make yourself invaluable, I think, is asking those questions and then saying, how do we do our marketing? How can I get involved in our sales process? How does the business run? And all of those component parts feed one another and ultimately allow someone who's just entering a business, whether they're young or mid-career, to become invaluable.
Definitely.
To those who are really running the business every day.
Asking how does the business run is such a important thing to do, but quite a rare thing to do. I don't think many junior people tend to think like that, which will create a real standout, make your work a lot better.
I think so. It makes the work better and it allows them to grow over time. Because as you grow from, let's say if the path is that you've been hired as a graphic designer, right? Mm. Just to create a role. Ultimately, your goal may be to be a creative director. And as you advance through the roles between junior designer and creative director, you're going to take on more responsibilities with running the business and attracting new clients and cultivating those relationships.
Definitely.
And so it's really important to have that understanding of where you're going and how that's done and how you're going to do that differently than someone else.
Yeah.
Because each of us have our own styles and we each approach those challenges very differently. And that is, I think, the magic of what makes a good business run is having a lot of different voices and a lot of different creative spirits who each approach a problem from very different vantage points.
Absolutely. That's invaluable. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Claire.